I want you to imagine, we are standing out by the tailgate of my old pickup truck, looking at a pile of what most people would just call junk. There is a specific kind of weight to a bucket full of copper pipe, and a very distinct clatter when a piece of extruded aluminum hits the bed of a truck. To the untrained eye, this is just a mess that needs to be hauled to the dump. But to those of us who have spent years working with our hands, this is a harvest. We are looking at the skeleton of old projects, the leftovers of plumbing jobs, and the discarded shells of appliances that have finally given up the ghost. There is a real satisfaction in knowing that these materials don't have to end up buried in a hole in the ground. Instead, we can break them down, sort them out, and send them back into the world to become something new. It takes a bit of patience and a fair amount of grit, but once you understand the language of metal, you start seeing value where everyone else sees trash. You might be thinking that it isn't worth the effort to drive across town just to drop off a few old lawnmower parts or some leftover wiring. I'll tell you why that mindset changes the moment you step onto a scrapyard scale for the first time. There is a unique energy in a salvage yard. It is loud, it is industrial, and it requires a certain level of awareness. You are moving among heavy machinery and people who are doing serious work. But once you get the hang of how the system flows, it becomes a ritual. It is about more than just a few extra dollars in your pocket. It is about the stewardship of the materials we use every day. We are the ones who understand how things are built, so it only makes sense that we should be the ones who understand how to take them apart properly. I remember one of the first times I tried to get serious about scrapping. I had spent the better part of a weekend stripping the copper out of an old air conditioning unit I'd replaced. I was so proud of that pile of shiny red metal. I loaded it all into a single plastic bin and hauled it down to the local yard. I didn't bother to sort the clean pipe from the pieces that still had brass fittings or solder on the ends. I just figured copper was copper. When I got to the window, the guy behind the glass barely looked up before grading the entire load as number 2 copper, which pays significantly less than the clean stuff. I had spent hours of labor, only to lose a chunk of the value because I didn't take 5 extra minutes to snip off the contaminated ends. That taught me a hard lesson about the cleanliness of metal. In this world, the more work you do on your end to prep the material, the more the yard respects the load. Now, I never go in without my magnets and my side cutters ready. Before we even think about loading the truck, we have to talk about the primary tool of the trade, and it isn't a wrench or a torch. It is a simple magnet. If you take a magnet and touch it to a piece of metal and it sticks tight, you are dealing with ferrous metal, which is basically iron or steel. If the magnet doesn't stick, you've likely found the good stuff, non-ferrous metals like copper, aluminum, or brass. This is the first thing I do with every single piece of scrap that comes across my workbench. I keep a small, strong magnet on a string hanging right by the scrap bins. If it clicks onto the metal with a heavy thud, it goes into the steel pile. If it slides right off, I know I need to look closer, because that is where the real recycling value lies. Once we have our piles identified, we start the process of separation. We want to be looking for copper first, as it is the gold standard of the scrap world. You'll find it in 2 main forms, wire and pipe. When you hold a piece of old household wiring, you can feel the stiffness of the copper inside the plastic insulation. Some guys will tell you to burn that insulation off, but I'm telling you right now, don't ever do that. It is terrible for the environment. It's often illegal, and most reputable yards won't even take it if it looks burnt. Instead, we keep the insulated wire in its own bin. If the wire is thick enough, like a main service line, I might take a utility knife and strip the jacket off to get to that bright, shiny, bare, bright copper. But for the thin stuff, it isn't worth the time. We just coil it up and move on to the next item. Then we have the aluminum. It's light, it has a duller silver sheen than steel, and it feels much softer if you hit it with a file. You'll see it in window frames, old lawn furniture, and siding. When I'm handling aluminum, I'm always feeling for attachments. If there is a steel screw still stuck in an aluminum bracket, that is what the yard calls dirty aluminum. I make it a point to back those screws out, or cut that section off. When you can toss a piece of metal into the bin and know it is 100% pure aluminum, you are making the recycler's job easier and ensuring you get the best rate. It's that attention to detail that separates a guy who is just dumping junk from a person who truly knows their craft. As we move into the actual execution of a scrap run, safety is something I never leave to chance. Scrap metal is sharp, heavy, and often covered in old oils or residues. I never touch a piece of scrap without a heavy pair of leather gloves. I've seen enough stitches from dull pieces of tin to know better. When we are breaking down larger items, like an old washing machine, I always make sure any capacitors are discharged and the power cord is clipped off first. I take a heavy-duty set of snips and a pry bar, and I work methodically. We aren't just smashing things, we are deconstructing them. We pull the electric motor, which is heavy because of the copper windings inside, and we set that aside. We pull the stainless steel drum, if it has one. By the time we are done, that bulky appliance is reduced to a small pile of high-value components and a shell of recyclable steel. Loading the vehicle is an art form in itself. I like to put the heavy ferrous steel at the bottom or toward the front of the bed to keep the weight distributed over the axles. You can feel the truck settle as the weight goes on, and you want that weight to be centered. The high-value non-ferrous bins, the copper and the brass, go in last, and usually get covered or tucked into the cab if I'm worried about them. When you drive into the scrapyard, you'll usually see a large drive-on scale. I pull the truck onto the scale, wait for the green light with a signal from the operator, and they record the gross weight. From there, I follow the signs to the various piles. When you get to the copper and aluminum area, it's a different vibe. You'll likely be unloading by hand into smaller scales or bins. This is where your sorting pays off. The worker there is going to look through your bins. They might use their own magnet just to check your work. If they see that you've already snipped the brass ends off your copper pipes and that your aluminum is clean of steel bolts, they will move quickly. There is a mutual respect there. Once the non-ferrous is weighed and ticketed, I drive back to the main steel pile. This is usually a massive mountain of twisted metal, where a giant crane with an electromagnet or a grapple is working. I back the truck up, drop the tailgate, and clear out the steel. It is a workout, and you'll feel the muscles in your back and shoulders working as you heave those heavy pieces out. Once the truck is empty, I drive back onto the scale for the tear weight. The difference between that first heavy weight and this final empty weight is the amount of steel I've delivered. I park the truck, walk into the cashier's office, and hand over my ID and my tickets. There is a specific smell in those offices, a mix of hydraulic fluid, stale coffee, and cold metal. While I wait for them to process the paperwork, I usually look at the board to see how the market prices are moving. Metal prices fluctuate just like anything else, and after a while, you start to get a feel for when to hold onto your scrap and when to cash it in. The final step is the most rewarding. Walking out of that office with a bit of cash is great, but the real feeling comes when you get back to your truck and look at the empty bed. The clutter that was taking up space in your garage or behind the shed is gone, and you know for a fact that it is headed back to a furnace to be melted down and repurposed. That old, leaky copper pipe might end up as part of a new home's plumbing, and that battered aluminum siding could become a part of a new car. We have closed the loop. When I get back home, I spend a few minutes sweeping out the bed of the truck. There are always little shards of metal or bits of glass left behind, and I don't want those finding their way into a tire later on. I put my gloves back on the shelf, wipe down my magnet, and set my bins back in their corner, ready for the next project. Recycling scrap responsibly isn't the easiest way to get rid of junk, but it is the right way. It requires us to be mindful of the materials we handle, and to respect the work that goes into producing them in the first place. It turns a chore into a hobby, and a waste product into a resource. You might find that you start looking at the world a little differently after a few trips to the yard. You'll see an old tossed-out chair on the curb, and instantly know if those legs are aluminum or just painted steel. You'll feel the weight of a brass faucet in your hand, and know exactly how much work it will take to clean it up for the bin. That is the mentor's secret. Once you learn how to value the small things, the big projects don't seem so daunting. We are just taking things one piece at a time, sorting the good from the bad, and making sure nothing goes to waste. It's a good way to live, and it's a damn good way to run a shop.